Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And today, we welcome Tom Oser into the Cigar Lounge. Tom, how are you today?
Outstanding. How you doing, Joe?
I am so good. I would upset people if I told them how good I am today.
I'm upset just looking at you.
See, there you go. And the good news is these people don't have to look at me, so you can suffer in silence. At any rate, Tom, I want to get started today. I always like to get started with a little bit about what is it you do? Please tell us what you do in the speaking world.
Those are two similar but different things, right? Sure. So I'm a consultant and a professional speaker. My professional speaking is always related to in service to the consulting that I do. So my main line of revenue is professional services for strategy and execution of strategy with clients. And then the professional speaking is mostly opportunistic. I mean, I've done things like taking the YPO and speaking on the future of electric vehicles in replacement of internal combustion engines and so forth, as well as speaking on business and technology, the transformation of businesses by leveraging technology. That's mainly where my expertise is, but that's always in service to most of my revenue generating time is spent in consulting with clients.
So when you say opportunistic, are you using speaking, I guess, as chum in the water to get the people to hire you or as a marketing tool?
Yeah. And you know, chum in the water is a visual that people who fish know. It's pretty smelly, but it's very effective, right? It gets out there. And if I were doing it properly, there would be a sheen of Tom Oser all over the place trying to draw clients in. And I don't do it as well as I should. And so I try to, like a moth to the flame, I try to hang out with people who are really focused on marketing and have things to say about that, like our buddy Ed Rigsby and the folks in the NSA, to try to be reminded about my behaviors in speaking and looking at it more professionally as a marketing channel.
And let me ask you this. How long have you been a speaker first?
You know, I've been a speaker for 20, 30 years. And I was doing it in the industry as an expert in telecommunications and routing problems, really long-haired mathematical and telecommunications stuff. But I came to the NSA in professional speaking, the way that a lot of NSAers do it, probably 12 years ago.
Okay. And how long have you been a consultant?
Oh, quarter of a century and more. I've come up through global consulting with global firms like Ernst & Young, Infosys, these international consulting firms that take offshoring and you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of contracts and really transforming large businesses. I've also worked with detailed strategy only boutique firms and serving. I've consulted for the CEO of Microsoft China and the Royal Bank of Scotland, going in with the CEO and the executive committees of global firms, as well as currently serving the middle market, $20 million to $500 million companies.
And right now you're on your own. You're not with a bigger company at this point.
Single shingle. And I have a network of colleagues with all different types of expertise. So I can call upon, close friends and family in the consulting and often the speaking industry to do things together if the project is big enough and supports a team of consultants.
And in, let me ask this, a strange way of asking, but is there anything about you or your work that people in the Cigar Peg just wouldn't know that would be really cool to know?
There's probably a lot that the Cigar Peg doesn't know because I'm kind of connected in, but I'm not an always present member. I think I'm a recovering technologist. That is, you have a really deep background in technology, and have been fighting the good fight of getting over to the human business side of the conversation all the time. So, you know, tongue in cheek, recovering technologist is that I know what it's like to be buried in the bits and the bytes, and the need for engineers and technical people to open up their ears and consider other ways of thinking. It's not always about right and wrong. Sometimes it's how do you navigate and get things done in the gray of just being part of a human organization. So I think the real strong suit that I have is that I can talk to subject matter experts and help them to get out of their own way, because there's a whole world of profit and organization and the people. You know, management wouldn't be so difficult if it didn't involve human beings. And that's really the hardest part of every technical problem, even, is getting to a common point of understanding and communication just between plain human beings, you know?
I think that's true in so many different things. We used to always say the practice of law would have been great if we didn't have to deal with clients, judges, and other lawyers.
Well said.
So basically, I mean, you're what I would classify as a nerd that has flown out of the nest to join the civilized people.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how nowadays nerds wear the nerd badge as a badge of honor. Yeah. So I won't fight you on that now. Yeah. 20 years ago.
Purely nerd is a compliment coming from me.
Oh, so, God knows.
100%. In your career, has one person, and by the way, when I say career, I'm going to speak to you as consultant / speaker. So whichever lane you choose, in your career, who has been your biggest mentor or supporter and why?
Biggest mentor and supporter and why? You know, I'd have to go to a guy who plucked me out of close to undergraduate school. I was out of school for a year or two as a civil engineer of all things, mm-hmm. construction, concrete, and so forth. And this guy was about 10 years ahead of me out of Stevens Institute of Technology. We were engineers out of that small but erudite institution out of Hoboken, New Jersey. And he hired me into the telecommunications industry. And I realized I wasn't going to be in civil, and I took the bait and went into that. And, you know, he spoke to me like my father had a phrase that he used to use. He says, "Tommy, I don't beat you. I talk to you like a Dutch uncle." That was my father's way of saying that I'm trying to talk to you for your best, you know, and no matter how much you don't listen to me. Well, this is what Pete Foster did for me in the telecom industry. And he always told me, what was going on, how I was appearing, and the choices that I was free to make. And here it is 40 years later, and I just had a telephone call from him a week ago. And he gave me the greatest compliment of all. He asked me to talk to his son-in-law. His son-in-law is a career politician out of Texas, trying to make a transition out into the software world and software sales. And he asked me to just talk to him, and I realized when the guy got on the line with me that he was really looking for a mentor.
Okay.
out of his family. His father-in-law is great, but you know, Pete was amazing that way. It's the giving back, and it's the always listening with an honest set of ears and not telling you what to do, but just illuminating from an observer's point of view, what do you seem to be involved in? What does it look like you're wrestling with? And here are the choices that appear before you. And now you're free to make those choices. Really powerful guy.
That is a phenomenal mentor. And it sounds like at this point, Pete is trusting you. So the student has become the master.
or the pretended to the master throne, right?
There you go. That's it. That's awesome. As we talk about you mentoring, let's try this. I love asking this. If you could sit down right now and talk to yourself at 16 years of age and give yourself career advice, what would that look like?
At 16?
Yeah.
That was a pretty dangerous Tom Oster at the time. 16.
Assuming you would listen to yourself. I wouldn't have listened to myself at 16, but we'll assume that you would listen to yourself at 16.
You know, I'll go back to that age, and a history teacher of mine in high, that was high school now, right? 16 was high school.
Yeah.
And a history teacher of mine said, "Well, Tom, what are you planning to do for college?" And I said, "I'm going to go to the Wharton School of Business." And he looked at me. He said, "Number one, business. You don't need a degree to do business. That doesn't turn you into a human being. Number two, why would you spend so much money on an Ivy League education for something as mundane as business?" So he told me in just that one sitting, think about becoming a human being first, because everybody goes into business. And don't kid yourself that you need an Ivy League education to do what all other human beings do. And I just wasn't smart enough to get into Penn and Wharton into college at the time. And so that wasn't a choice that I had to make.
But you got into engineering.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. I'm not pretending to be incapable. But I went to engineering, and by the way, I went into engineering because I had an aptitude for math or science, mm-hmm. and there was nothing else to do. And I think the advice I would have given the 16-year-old is, don't go to college until you really know what you want to do. I went to engineering because somebody said, "Oh, you're good at math and science. That's what engineers do." And I just followed the default. So I think, thank you for the question. I never saw it before, but I think what I would tell the 16-year-old is what I would have told my kids if they weren't really directly going into college: take the time off, go work, and find a real purpose in life.
Yeah. So if you had given yourself advice at 16, you might never have known what a slump test was.
You know, that's exactly correct.
And by the way, I realize you and I are the only two in this group that probably knows what a slump test is,
because everyone's imagining what their slump number is themselves right now. So you can
tell. Right. and at some point they can all ask us while we are sitting around drinking, and we'll tell them what it is, but we're not going to discuss it today.
Not today. Okay.
So
that's our cigar peg quandary. What's
the civil engineer's secret? So let me ask you, as you went through your career, what is, in your mind, the biggest mistake or failure that you ever experienced?
The biggest mistake or failure, and I won't. The biggest mistake or failure was going in to business, into the business of a close social friend, recognizing where we were at odds and believing, like the starstruck engaged partner of a future spouse, thinking that I was going to change him. And, you know, for an adult, mature, experienced consultant to walk in and really look a situation that had danger written all over it and go in full time, thinking I was going to change this CEO of his private company domain, that lasted about 30 days, and it went on for 7 years. So I think the biggest failure was too much ego, really thinking that knowing the right thing that should be going on in this situation and walking into somebody else's absolute domain, 100% ownership, and I'm going to change this guy? Yeah, that was a serious, naive career step.
And how would you suggest, and I'm going to say that I'm calling it generally a partnership or a business opportunity. How would you suggest someone look at a business opportunity or partnership to avoid having that happen? Any checklist you learned or rules that you can apply to say, I'm not doing this, and this is good advice?
Yeah. The one checklist is, there's only one bullet checklist. Am I really, truly, am I talking myself into this?
Great question.
Am I talking?
Awesome.
Because that, and that's what I did in that situation. I actually turned it down three separate times. And I maintained an arm's length and did a post-merger integration for 2 years. But then I knew too much. I knew too much about the company. I really was valuable to them. And I used all of that excuse as to why, oh yeah, we can make this work. And I can see myself talking myself into that thing. Now, I don't regret the long arc of it. It brought me to California, to Los Angeles. Kids had a great education. They're out of college. All of that's been wonderful. But it was a grind. Yeah, it was a grind.
I get that. Okay, you're in the middle of this grind. And what is it that kept you going? What kept you going forward? What motivation was there for you?
You know, there were a couple of things. One is primary motive in life was kids were in high school and getting into college. And as a family, we're just very, very successful at doing everything that we needed to and wanted to do. And the kids have come out, and all I can say is they are tax-paying citizens of the United States. Pay dirt. We've done our job as, you know, parents raising productive human beings. End of story there. The other thing that kept me going was I had my hands on the data and the numbers of this business, and I actually could affect change along the way.
Okay.
In teaching my teams about how to think about their jobs and their careers and their business differently. And so I saw a lot of localized private wins that I couldn't brag about across the company. There was going to be a no-win trying to go toe-to-toe with the owner and the CEO. So I found my successes here and there, and I started to get more involved in the external world through NSA. So when I came to LA in 2009, 2010 is when I joined up with NSA, and I built up more and more of my external life and the speaking and setting myself up for the consulting and the independent consulting that I do now.
And what is it that inspires you every day now? What is it in the morning that says, I'm going to make this happen?
You know, I'm working with a couple of clients, and one in particular, back in the civil engineering concrete world, as we were referring to there. And he's got a real solution that's going to have an environmental impact and a hazard and safety impact on the workers across the concrete industry. You know, and I have a shot at small equity part there, but also compensation in the consulting side. So really, really getting to work with clients in different domains and actually having an impact on their ability to bring their products and services to market and help them to grow their business. And what I learned from Rigsby and the NSA is I'm taking this guy through the appropriate associations that are relevant to building his business. And I'm making those relationships for future speaking and so forth back in the domain of civil engineering, concrete, and operations, as well as entrepreneurship. So it's this virtuous cycle where everything seems to be coming together as being useful to the other, the speaking, the consulting, and the teaching and mentoring of younger people.
If I ask you to focus strictly on the speaking business, what do you believe were, I want to say, myths or misconceptions that you might have had when you started? And I don't know if they were from internal or external, but what misconceptions existed or what?
Well, you know, I think I may have mentioned it on a Cigar Peg call recently or another one of Ed's calls. And that is, I suffer from the imposter syndrome that you refer to that everybody should have, that somehow if I've said something to a group once, they already know that. And if I repeat it, they're going to say, oh, he's a one-trick pony. And so I watched myself early in my career, 25 years ago, every summer I'd go to this technical conference at Boulder, Colorado, and I'd speak. And I would wrap myself around an axle to say something entirely new every summer so that I wouldn't be perceived as the guy, oh, there he is again on the same subject. And I actually, in my own egotistical mind, I actually denigrated a guy, not out loud, but to myself. Oh, here he comes again, and he's speaking on frame relay. Well, frame relay was a simple and an old technology, and he spoke on it for 10 years. But you know what? He's running a website today with corporate sponsorships, and he's probably doing $500,000 a year by doing webtorials, basic technical stuff that every generation of technologists who are coming into the industry needs to learn. And so there's a need for repeated information again and again and again. So that's the biggest mistake I've made in my career is being afraid to repeat myself and not appearing original.
That's awesome. Great thinking. So sitting here today, I'm going to ask, do you believe you are successful?
I do in many ways, and I always have that haunting sense that I'm a rank amateur. I got to get my ass moving. So the answer is yes. I have a resume that I'll stand up to and bring it into Fortune 500 companies. Been there, done that in so many ways. Successful speaker, every time I speak and when I finish, I can feel that I'm successful and I've accomplished that. Pointing to a career of keynote after keynote after keynote, I'm sorry, I just read Jim Cathcart's business card. And I know Jim from here in and you read Jim Cathcart's electronic business card and you just see the mountain that he presents. God help you if you look to other people to compare yourself. I don't feel successful every time I read Jim's thing, but I revel in the fact that I know him on a first name basis and he'll take my phone call. So, yeah, in that way, I'm successful.
All right. And at some point in your career, we can assume you're starting off and you weren't successful. Was there ever an aha moment when you went, oh, my God, I made it?
Yeah.
Please share that.
It was really early on. I was in, and it had to do with speaking. I was in a laboratory working on my doctorate in computer and information engineering. And I was the old guy in the lab. I was 30. All my buddies from India, China, and Greece, they were all in their mid-20s. So I was the stupid American old guy in the lab, right? But and we had contracts with different companies, and TransSwitch up in Connecticut, my professor, mentor, laboratory leader was supposed to go speak to them. He couldn't do it. He goes, Tom, I want you to go up to TransSwitch and present your stuff. I said, why? Are they interested? And he says, no, but I have to go here. So just go present your stuff. And I was catatonic. I was like, what am I going to speak to these engineers in the telecommunications industry on this stuff? I said, Vaughn, they're going to kill me. He goes, no. Give them the talk on your stuff. Just do that. And take Vijay. So Vijay was doing his master's. He and I went up there and I delivered what I was working on. Two things occurred. They were interested and they were unfamiliar with it. So they couldn't touch me. And to them, I was a genius. And I said, I'm not a genius. What's going on here? It's just that I spent more and more and more of my time on this subject relevant to them, but they didn't have the time to really dig into it. So I came up and the conversation that went on and the Q&A that came on was so interesting to me because things were occurring to them for the first time that I had been thinking about for weeks and months and years. And I could just deliver honestly. And it wasn't rocket science, but to them, it was interesting. That's when I realized I was successful. Successful is not trying to be what you're not, but just bringing what you have. And if you're genuinely interested in delivering to somebody else, some value to somebody else, they're going to engage. And if they engage, if you can say something, and the audience or the person that listens to you authentically engages, that is success. That was an amazing feeling of success. I said, Vaaman, you don't know how this went. He goes, I know exactly how it went. You delivered and they appreciated. I said, yeah. He says, they can't touch you in something that they don't think about every day. It was an epiphany.
So you laid your heart and soul on the line and won. I mean, you just put who you were out there.
I laid my heart and soul on the line and I felt like I got away with murder.
That's there you go. I'll take that. But that is success.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's right.
Tom, are there currently any projects that you're working on that you're looking forward to for the new year?
Yeah. There's an area of leadership that I'm working on. And it's kind of like it's esoteric. But I'm working with a number of faculty members from universities all over the world, working on an area called ontological inquiry. And that is kind of not what you know, but how you exist in life on a universal basis. And there's a book out there called The Three Laws of Performance. And this is what's at the crux of it. The three laws are, number one, human beings behave in ways that are correlated to the way that a situation occurs to them. You and I go into a bar, there's a mosh pit, you know, Joe looking at you, you jump into the mosh pit because you think it's fun. I run out the front door looking for the cops to stop the murder. We both perceive the same thing. We act in ways correlated with different ways that it occurs to us. Number two, the way things occur to human beings arises in language. Ding, ding, ding. This is very interesting to us as speakers, right? Number three, effective leaders are those people who create possible futures in language that changes the way situations occur to the people that they're leading, such that the people that they're leading will naturally correlate their behavior to bring about that future.
You know, I think that is an awesome way to bring this to an end. Great advice and a great prospect for you.
Yeah.
Tom, for the people in the Cigar Peg, if anyone wants to reach out to you, what is the best way to get a hold of you and reach out if that's what they want to do?
Yeah. A best way would be email tom@pipeline-strategies.com. All right. Or you're in the Cigar Peg, just send me a text, 973-454-9912.
There you go. And hopefully if people want to reach out to you, they will do that, Tom. And Tom, very grateful to have you here today. Thank you very much. I appreciate your guidance, your wisdom, and your patience and time.
Joe, thanks a lot. It's been a great half hour or so with you.
And everyone, that has been Tom Oser in the Cigar Lounge. And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.